Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine. Our most precious and accepted scientific principles, built over millennia by luminaries including Einstein, Darwin, Hawking, are all built on one basic idea, that time is a straight line. However, logical contradictions that arise are giving ever more improbable explanations to fill the gaps. String theory, dark matter, parallel universe, it just doesn't add up. But what if time is not a straight line? What if time is a circle with a relatively short repeating cycle? Everything falls neatly into place. Welcome to Flash Time, a revolutionary new world view book written by today's special guest, Jules Bowles. Flash Time is a challenge to everything we think we know. It is an idea he developed over decades based on inconsistencies in science, even though his original intention was actually to disprove cyclic time. Jules Bowles is a chief gemologist at the British Gemological Institute. Something always tongue-ties me. Gemological Institute. Very good. So let me introduce you. You hear a little bit of Jules in the background trying to correct me, but or help me. So let me introduce you. Good morning, Jules.
Hello there. Nice to talk to you, Randy. Far away in Florida, we're in the same room.
Yes, it's crazy. So you're in the United Kingdom?
Yes, London itself. It's a nice fine day here. It must be in Florida where the sun always shines.
Well, it's summer.
Rest
and summer is a rainy season, so it gets a little bit like London here.
Okay.
So why did you write this book? Let's just start with that.
Well, I came across the concept of time being a cyclic process and found out that it's the oldest idea on Earth. Out of all the ideas about time, everybody in the ancient world, literally every culture you can think of, all the way from the Stone Age through to Pueblans and in every continent, in every age, thought time was a cyclic process like day and night, only on a bigger scale. And I thought, well, that's a nice ancient idea, but it can't be right because everybody today thinks Big Bang Theory is right. And Einstein thought it and all the names you mentioned. So I thought it should take me a few hours to disprove that. I can just disprove it and move on with my personal thinking. That was 40 years ago. And I then found out that it could not be disproved. I threw everything at it. And even Darwinian evolution, it doesn't stack up. The millions of years don't even work. It was a mess. And so I kept on researching it and found out that it is impossible to disprove. So I put up a $9,000 prize to anybody who can disprove it, knowing I'll never have to pay that, but I'll be happy if I have to.
This is a strong conviction on your part, right?
Well, it's through a lifetime of checking it all out, and I covered 132 different fields and thinking I must be wrong somewhere. And it turns out the ancient idea of time being a cyclic process is absolutely impossible to disprove.
So when I think of time, because of all the spiritual education I have,
right.
In the spiritual world, time doesn't really exist. So when we talk about cyclical time, we're talking about in the physical world.
Yes, I think that's right. It's a very difficult thing to split, but you're right. In dreams and in the spirit sense, time is encountered and experienced in a different way. It still runs, but it is experienced in a different way.
Right, and one that we would have a very difficult time understanding or relating to. If time is a cycle, then you said this would be a reason for great happiness because it would mean the universe does not end in darkness as claimed, but in a continuum that always turns out well no matter what. Do people really think that the universe is going to end in darkness?
People in science do, and we have expensively made programs here in the UK, and I've seen some broadcast from the States as well, which is the conventional view of people in, you know, Cornell and Harvard and all these top parts of the world where they teach standard thinking in astronomy, and that is what they think. They think it'll take billions of years, but it'll all just fade away and it happened by chance. And none of that fits in. Not a word of it. Extraordinarily.
Yeah. And getting back to the question I just asked before, many believe that we are spiritual beings living a physical life, not the other way around, and that our souls reincarnate many times. And this is certainly a cycle. So isn't this a concept people of spirituality or consciousness or faith have already embraced? This is a kind of a opinion.
You're exactly right. That is a completely standard thinking in the sort of spiritual world, which many of us are aware of, because it's obviously impossible that Big Bang Theory could actually be true, as they're beginning to realize slowly. And a few people in science are beginning to say this, that it's impossible that the world could just burst into being one day in darkness without any time or space, and all of a sudden there are cosmos is there and the planets and stars and fridge magnets. It just doesn't make any sense at all.
Right.
So
and you
I
say many
right.
are... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that was it. I was just tying that up. Your mention of reincarnation is very deep because it makes sense if you think of the self in science terms as a kind of dot, but without any mass, then the mind as a kind of the soul can reincarnate and move from A to B at faster than light speeds. And this changes the whole thing. I found out the FBI for 40 years have been solving the most serious cases using clairvoyance. Have you heard about that?
Yes.
And they have a program called, it's about the detectives, they call them, who use clairvoyance. and it meets legal standards, they check out the story that they found, and the whole state of the crime was fixed into the matter of the place. And people can tune into that and look back and see what took place, which is extraordinary, but that helps prove the way the mind fits into the quantum world. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, it does. I mean, that's, you know, that makes more sense than anything about detective work, you know, because, right, if somebody can look into the past and see it, wow, crime solved.
Well, they've solved literally hundreds of cases that way, and cases where there's no link between the person who did it and the victim, or even finding lost people and lost kids. They've solved some extremely big cases like that. There's a lady actually in Florida who does this. You might have heard of her. Her last name is Rainier. I can't think of her first name.
No, I'm not aware. I'm not aware of that.
But there is a TV program about all this, and mentioning the detectives who are clairvoyants, and they really do solve some wonderful cases and explain what happened to people.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. So you say that this is not a new idea at all, but actually the single oldest one we have ever used, that all the ancient cultures thought of life in this cyclic way, even those in the Stone Age. How so?
Yes, extraordinary. The fact that they drew the same symbols, you'll see it at the beginning of the book, there's 39, 40 pictures of the symbols in every age, literally Neanderthals scratching in charcoal on cave walls and things like that. The same symbol of a disc with four dots in it, showing the four quarters of time, starting off with an age of gold and order that people in stories have talked about as paradise or heaven, and then it degrades into chaos and warfare and the chaos we see now. And then one day, when the chaos becomes unsupportable, in an instant, literally a flash, it switches back into the way it used to be. And that is such a powerful thing that happened. It's the only way to explain how all those cultures that never met came up with the same symbols and drew them on there in their art. There's no other way to explain that. Nobody ever asked that question of how can they be the same. Nobody ever looked at it, but I've checked it all these years, and it's astonishing.
I had read that linear time was a concept that was man-made with the use of a clock to control people, to control a kingdom or a population of sorts. Had you ever heard that before?
That is what it is tended to be used for, because people in charge will tend to do that. And from the days of the feudal lord, who was the squire of a piece of land, they used day and night to control people. So that pretty much is it. Yeah, there's some truth in that, unfortunately.
Okay. As a gemologist, you say that rocks hold the key evidence of cyclic time, and they show how fast huge events such as volcanoes and earthquakes, tsunami waves can happen. Please explain that to us. That's a big concept.
Well, it's not as a gemologist particularly that one can see that. It's in the broader non-gem quality rocks. So instead of rubies and diamonds, it's in the layers of rock that you see. You'll have seen the pictures in the book that show layers that come back. So every 4 or 5 feet you get the same type of hardness of rock. So it's as though they happened in pulses. And when you work it out, we have the white cliffs on the south coast that are famous all over the world. And every foot and a half they have a layer of black flint. And they used to guess, and it was a guess, that every 2 millimeters of chalk. It was 1 year, but they just made that up, because nowhere in the world is chalk being formed. But actually, it appears the only sensible way to see this, and the only way that works, is that each of those layers of flint every foot and a half is 1 year, and the flint forms each year. And when you do that, cyclic time fits. It's extraordinary to say things like this, but it completely changes our vision of time, and there's no evidence for the millions and billions of years in a long line that have been claimed all this time. Extraordinary.
Truly. Another thing you say is that science is not knowledge, but rather a study of what knowledge might be. The mistake of today has been to accept theory as fact. Some ideas are pure fantasy. So what ideas are you referring to? I mean, I know we're talking about linear time versus cyclic time, but but what is the mistake that science has made in regard to this? Obviously, they see it linear.
The reason is they couldn't imagine that time could be eternal. They couldn't get their head around that idea. And so they manufactured a way that it just came into being in a magical way. They don't like the word magic, but that's what it is. To say that one day there was no time or space and all of a sudden the universe is there and it's expanding. They just made all that up. And there are certain features I've got in the book that show to people who study astrophysics that the evidence all shows that that could not possibly be true. There are certain astronomical shapes in space, and they are meant to be billions of years old, but they don't have any dust on, and so they have white ice. Because there's so much dust in space between here and Neptune, they could not possibly be spinning through space, picking up dust without showing that dust on the outside, and instead they show water ice. One example is called Haumea, and it's a large lump of rock about 1,200 miles long, and it's covered in white ice, which is impossible. That's just one example. I've got lots, but I won't bore you with more of them. But there are lots of examples of this that show current thinking of how the solar system formed is impossible. It was always here. So that's the main one, the idea that it took 4.5 billion years. They've just made these numbers up. Meteorites are claimed to be dated at 4.5 billion years, so they think that's proof, but it isn't.
So when you say always here, that's really such a vast concept to grasp, that it always was and always will be. That's just an amazing concept to grasp, isn't it?
Very, very much so. And Lyell wrote a book that Charles Darwin read about the geology of the Earth, and he just said the idea that time is eternal is not a thing we can conceive of. So they just made up ideas that didn't make them have to do that. And so we're left with, now that we've got into astrophysics and we have the giant Keck scopes, there are two of them on top of Hawaii and many others around the world, and we look at radio waves and all sorts of things, the proof is there that time is a constant thing, and space did not arise out of a dot, as Big Bang Theory claims, and cannot be explained. And so it must be an eternal process, and with it the human soul and the mind as part of that, and all the way it all works fits in.
I sure hope one day we all get a chance to understand it, you know, as spirits or souls, or maybe, you know, we can grasp all these concepts, because there's so much to know. You relate deja vu to this concept, and so how is cyclic time and deja vu related?
Well, that's a very good question. I asked over 1,500 people informally over these many years as I met them, because being a gemologist of rare stones, I used to have to fly around the world putting a value to them. So I'd meet a lot of people, and I'd just throw into the conversation, have you ever had an experience of deja vu? And out of those 1,500 and more, I gave up counting about them, only three people said, no, I've never had that. Everybody, nearly everybody else, said, yes, and it's intriguing. And it's because time is a cyclic process, you occasionally get a snapshot of a scene, and it may be a very ordinary one, of bearded being in exactly the same point in time that has been experienced in the past. And that shows how it works. Extraordinary. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that we know exactly what deja vu is, but yes, we've been there before, obviously. So that that totally makes sense what you're saying.
Well,
you know,
this is
a whole different way
book of. Yes, as far as I'm aware, this is the first book in history to explain how that works. The scientists just treat it as an oddity. It couldn't possibly be, to their way of thinking, true that you're actually looking at a scene that's happened before. Because if it was true, it means everything they've been saying was wrong. And they're not ready to admit that. So it's never been explained before how it works. So here at last is a book that explains proof of there being a soul as different from the physical form, and how that fits in, and how time works, and how history works, and where science went so drastically wrong.
Yes. How are you received by scientists? How is this information received?
We did a big press launch here in the in Europe in September last year, and they did not take it up at all. They went, 80 copies went to newspapers, radio, TV, science journals, and they took one look and thought, don't know how to deal with this. It disproves everything we've thought is true. So I'm sure they're having a read through it, but only in the States are people thinking, gosh, this really does make sense. And we've sold quite a few copies in Australasia, and here, but not in the mainstream press are not able to deal with it. So I'm just completing a physics paper, and I think that'll help, because it explains just the physics and the astrophysics of how it fits in.
I hope it does. It's difficult. It takes time to get people to think a different way. But, you know, everything is changing. We're evolving into a new era where people are going to be, you know, we'll be experiencing the fifth dimension and things like that, that eventually it may not be in our lifetime. But we're evolving towards that. And as we do, people are waking up to ideas that we don't have to see it to believe it. You know, and that's spirit is an example. Spiritual things are examples because we don't always see what we believe. You were talking about in your book how there are existing theories on how our oceans formed. You know, I never really thought about that. But what are they saying it was, and what is your theory?
Well, they say there was a thing called the late heavy bombardment, which always makes me smile, because they see these huge meteorite craters. One in Arizona, you'll have heard of, the Barringer Crater, which is about a mile across. And they used to think it was formed by a volcano, because volcanoes look a bit like that, the caldera. And then they looked more closely and realized some gigantic piece of rock about 50 meters wide had hit the Earth so hard it created a mile-wide crater. And also there's a big crater underwater, which is harder to detect, in the Gulf of Mexico, you may have heard of, that they think was so huge an explosion it wiped out the dinosaurs in the Cretaceous era. And the idea is that if the Earth formed the way they say it did, and it was red hot, after the particles joined up and then formed in space. This is all nonsense. They've just made that up, but then they suddenly realized, but way too late, that if that was true and the Earth became red hot to begin with and then cooled down and here we are, where did the water come from? Because it would have boiled off if the Earth was red hot for a while. Mm, so they made up the idea that rocks from space contained water ice and landed here, and here are the oceans. But the oceans are 13,000 million cubic kilometers big. That's a lot of water to think arrived by a taxi from space. It's just nonsense. They've just made the whole thing up. But it really shocked me when I found out, when you think about it carefully, that's a ridiculous idea that conveniently this water came onto the Earth. And where did it come from? There'd need to be somewhere else with lots of water. And they've only found molecules of it in different places, but hardly any, literally molecular quantities, not oceans full of water. So it's, you know, that's a big problem for conventional thinking. They're not ready to deal with this, but they'll have to shortly.
So where did it come, where did the water come from?
It's always been here. The Earth has always been here. It was never red hot. It never formed from particles in space. I also found out another key point, that particles in space tend to be minus charged. So like poles repel, they don't attract. If there are lots of particles of dust and they had the same charge as everybody says, they would not be clumping together as they claim. They would be keeping their distance apart. It would never happen. Isn't that a shock?
Yes, it is. It is a shock. So is there such a thing as evolution? I mean, when we think about what man used to be and what man is now, or woman, it appears that there's been an evolution. How do you see that?
Yes, this is one of the big concepts that they've got seriously wrong. What appears to fit into history, if you look at it in a very dispassionate way, and it takes a real effort of thinking, as you so rightly pointed out at the top of the show, to get your mind around the idea that life on Earth could be a constant thing, eternal, that it never doesn't exist, it's always here, and that according to the history I've checked out, and the geology as well fits this, that age of gold, which started off the process, the age of order, then degraded and fell apart, hence the story of Atlantis in a broad way, and that led to the Stone Age. And that's why there are so few Stone Age people around. There should be, according to the maths, 620 billion Neanderthal skeletons if they'd lived for nearly a million years. And there are only 138.
Really?
That's a problem. That's a very big problem. So for a very short period of time, literally 100 or so years or less, the Cro-Magnon man and Neanderthals of the Stone Age were here and there around the world only because of the destruction of the previous Age of Order. And yet even they were drawing the symbols of cyclic time on the walls. And then that led to the slow growth in different parts of the world of the cultures, but they all drew the same symbols in their art. So it does take a lot of thinking about, doesn't it?
It does. So why do we look so different if we haven't evolved? What is that about?
It's just to do with different genes. The pool of different genes is easily changed, and radioactivity in different parts of the world can also alter genes. And there are just different genes in the world, so it can look like we came from different creatures, but it actually never happened. That's why they never found the missing link, and why in the UK in the 1900s, early 1900s, they faked the Piltdown Man. Did you hear about that?
No.
It's half man, half ape. People, your listeners can look up Piltdown Man, just spelt as you think it sounds, where this particular doctor faked an ape head with a human jaw. And actually, it was the other way around. It was a human head with an ape jaw. And he put it forward as real, said he found it in his garden. And he didn't. He faked it and stained it with tea. And everybody said, the missing link, we always knew it would exist, but it didn't, so they had to fake it. And it was completely fake, and everybody wrote about it, and then they had to go back on their story. A few people in the States and Canada said, we don't believe this, it doesn't look quite right. And they were right, it wasn't, it was a fake. But he never admitted it, the man who found it. He died and never admitted it. And then they rechecked some of the other things he claimed to have found, 20 or 30 in different museums, and they found most of those were fake as well. Isn't that terrible?
That is terrible. People were that desperate to prove their point.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So how does all this affect our individual lives?
Well, the wonderful thing is it is full of good news. This finding that the Earth is not chance, it's always been here. Human life has always been here. And there's a plan and a system and order and reasons for things. It's not haphazard chance, as the scientists have been claiming all these years, that the Earth didn't form by chance in space and here we are. So there must be life somewhere else in space. They've never found it. Because there hasn't been the, in a line, straight line, millions of years for that to happen. And that means that the future is good because it always turns out well. It's a bit like knowing there's going to be a lovely party next month and it comes up every month and it'll never stop happening. And the chaos we see now, no matter how bad it gets, it will always snap back into order when the chaos becomes unsustainable. And that fits into physics and chemistry, and it matches, the only option that matches all the facts we see, both in the geology of the Earth and in planetary space and in the stars.
So
that's
if
good
you
news.
Yeah, it is good news. If we think about us, and we start off as babies, and we end up as elderly people, and then we, you know, move on wherever we go, our souls go. That seems very linear. So, what are we missing when we look at our development from birth to death?
There's two parts to the answer to that, and they answer it very neatly, which you already know what the answers are, I'm quite sure.
Reincarnation.
Yes, and the existence of a soul, the being that is the mind, as separate from the physical form in which we live, because that needs to be checked for proof, and I've done that carefully in the book and shown how the brain interacts with the mind, and how the self appears to be like a star, which one can equate to a quantum dot of power. And this is what moves from body to new body and carries with it the character and habits and warmth and kindness and love that we have in one life goes into the next. And that explains the entire thing. That explains how the population grows, and how everybody has their own character. Even twins have a different character, even though they may look exactly the same. So that explains the whole thing.
Yes, it does. And I never thought about it, you know, in a scientific way. I mean, this is, so would you call would you call this scientific thinking? Would you call it quantum theory? What kind of broad heading can you put this under?
You'd call it a new world view, because it disagrees with nearly everything in science except central heating and refrigeration and car tires and obvious mechanical things that do work. The biggest theories in science, every single one of them to do with time, evolution, Big Bang theory, everything like that, the formation of the planets has all been made up. And that's why even planets, the giants like Jupiter, could not possibly have formed where they are. So when they begin to realize these things to do with the physics of how they move, they say, well, they must have migrated. They moved from somewhere else. But there's no evidence for that. And that's why at the top of the show you also said they've had to make up ever more fantastic ideas. That's another one of them. The migration of Jupiter, which is 11.2 times the width of the Earth. It's a huge force. And it apparently could not have formed where it now sits. So there are hundreds and hundreds of these pointers that show the entire thing is wrong. And the mind and self being a star that's not material, and hence where we get memory and dreams that are not material things. Psychology has never explained how memory works. It's not technically meant to happen, or how near-death experiences work, or deja vu, or all the other things I've mentioned in the book. You need a new world view for that. So naturally it has to explain both the spirit thinking and the world, the nature of how the real world actually is. So it's really just a new world view, but it fits the old one, so that's nice.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So it is, for those of us who think we are born and then we die, this would be a hard concept to grasp, because we're really talking about consciousness. We're talking about consciousness that always was and always will be, and how each of us comes into this world and inhabits a physical body. Not everybody buys that. I certainly do. Sounds like you do. And a lot of my listeners
do. You hit on a very deep point here, because the population of the Earth in about 1800, which is not long ago, was only approximately 1 billion people. So therefore, most people in the world, 6.5 or so billion people on top of that figure in the last 200 years, have appeared on Earth and have only taken a very few lives, if that is all true, as it appears to be. So therefore, if you talk about things that we've been talking about here, only somebody who's been through tens or twenties or thirties of different lives would understand it and think, yes, that makes sense to me. The rest would be just angry, as some people are, and say, no, that can't be true, because they can't imagine how it could be. But they don't have anything concrete to say as to why not. So that seemed to be the value of writing the book, to show, put in one book all the concepts that are there and all the evidence that is meant to support one point of view, and then show how it doesn't work or does. And we find that science can't explain anything of this kind, and ordinary logic and the classic Greek thinking of Aristotle and Socrates and Plato and characters like that actually works and makes sense. They were right.
Yeah, I guess people just say, you know, well, we're not meant to know, and that's that. It is what it is. I wanted to ask you, before we run out of time, you mentioned, you talked about aliens, you know, that you said it's never been proven that aliens visit us or that they exist. What are your feelings? Do you believe there is life out there?
No, I don't. Until it's found, that appears to be correct. They call it the Fermi paradox, that if there are aliens in existence, where are they? The fact that they've never arrived. Stephen Hawking once arranged a party in retrospect, before he died, of course, and said, any time travelers out there, you're invited to the party. And nobody turned up. So that is a clever idea, isn't it?
Nobody's turned up. What are they afraid of? Why aren't they showing up? So you think the evidence that they've found, that it's just all made up? You don't believe it really happens? You don't believe abductions happen and things like that?
No, I don't think they do, because a lot of them I've looked at, they nearly always say, but not in every case by any means, that I was just about to go to sleep when this happened. And I don't think they're discriminating between, in most cases, between dreams and the real world, which can be difficult. One can have a very powerful dream and wake up thinking, gosh, that looked real. But if time is a cyclic process, then there wouldn't be enough time in more than a few thousand years for that. So the millions of years claim where things evolve and other creatures evolved would be untrue. So until they find people somewhere or life in another planet, I'm sure they never will, because the evidence for cyclic time is so powerful. So that's the way it looks.
Very interesting.
It is,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, really. So much. I mean, your book is over 400 pages. There's a lot in here. So we're talking about your book, Flash Time, The Discovery and Meaning of Cyclic Time. Jules, where can we buy your book?
It's on Amazon.com and available all over the world. And there's an electronic version for people who like those in all the formats. So if that suits people, they can do that. It's an intriguing read. I would let people know it's the first book that's ever looked at all human knowledge, as far as one can, just as far as time is concerned, 132 different fields, and covered in a nice, easy way, so it's not difficult to read.
Right. Exactly. You're exactly right. And if anyone wanted to contact you, is there a way they can do that, or do you have a website?
We do, but the way to contact me would be through Facebook. We have under the hashtag #FlashTimeBook.
Okay.
We're on Facebook, and
okay.
We've mentioned your show there because it's such an intriguing show you have, and so I thought it'd be nice to put it on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, I mean it really helps when you bring in your people, your followers, whatever. To introduce them to a fine time for healing. So
yes,
anyway, well, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for being my guest today, calling in from London, and enjoy your sunny day.
Thank you for having me on the show, Randy. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and share such deep things that we've both found out about life.
Yes, it has been wonderful. I love these kind of discussions. So I thank you as well. All
it's
right, enjoy your day. Enjoy your day.
Thank
okay,
you
bye-bye.
Very much.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. And may joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.